to From Tits to Toes.
I am Dr. Michaela Rush, an OBGYN.
And I am Dr. Ann Sharkey, podiatrist.
And welcome back.
Yeah. How are you?
Well, I've been good.
Yeah. Someone asked me this week, they're like, how many episodes did you do last year? I said 48. Yeah. They're like, how's it going this year? I'm like, slower.
Just bear with us, people.
Yeah. I was like, you know, the world is picking up again, and so have the lives of us and our children. And yeah. So it's been a little bit more of a challenge, but we've got some good stuff in the pipeline.
I know. Well, and it was also a little easier when you lived closer.
I know.
Too. You moved a lot.
We had to go
away
and ruin it. Yes.
You ruined our podcast.
I know.
Podcast.
Yes.
I know. No, it is. I think it was easier.
Well, then I had surgery, and it's not easy to move around for a little while. So I'm starting to move around a little bit better.
Your knee has ruined everything.
It truly has. Meredith asked me, when are you going to be fun again?
Oh, no.
She's not wrong. It's been a long time.
Like, okay.
Right. I was like, I got injured in April of last year. We are closing in on 1 year.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So when you think about it that way, I was like, you're not wrong.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, coming soon.
Yeah. So. Let's be fun again.
Yeah.
And we need a slogan. Let's be fun again.
That could be.
Yeah.
Fun again is coming.
Yeah.
So. Well, you have some serious fun coming up.
You better
quit. You want to tell everyone about it?
Well, we have spring break coming up.
Yeah.
So.
It's officially started, yes. Like now.
So, yes. So, it's actually the beginning of spring break. We're in spring break now. We are planning on going to Taos, New Mexico, and going skiing and snowboarding, and I have it all planned. I have the lift tickets, and I have the rentals, and yeah, we're ready. Like, I'm ready to go skiing. And then we had difficulty finding a place. Well, I could find some places, but my husband wanted to plan it, so I said, okay.
And everybody is traveling this spring break, so the demand is high, so it's difficult. Yeah.
It is a little bit more difficult, but we couldn't agree on anything, so I said, okay, fine. Yeah. I was like, you plan it, you pick it. Like, the place, I don't care. You're in charge. Like, I'm tired of looking.
I'm tapping out on this
one. Tapping out. We're done.
Okay.
And, So he found a place that's very isolated and completely off the grid. And I didn't really realize it until this, like, the past couple weeks when I had to start actually thinking about it and planning it. I think I just...
Yeah. Well, when you told me off the grid, I was like, oh, so they don't have TV and they don't have internet, but they also don't have electricity.
Oh, there's no heat. And it snowed yesterday. So now I'm starting to panic. I'm like, how are we going to stay warm? And I've been, like, hammer texting the lady of, like, what am I going to do? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Like,
so everyone, there's also no indoor plumbing.
No, there's a...
Or it's indoor, but it's no actual, like, plumbing.
No, I think it's what's called a composting toilet, and I don't even know what it is. It doesn't sound
It's an outhouse.
It sounds like an outhouse.
Yeah.
In the house, but it's like an in-house.
Uh-huh. Do they have a heater in there, at least?
I don't... No, there's no heater. There's a wood-burning fireplace and a wood-burning stove in the master... Okay. In the bedroom, the one big bedroom, but I don't know... There's no other heater... And I don't know how we're gonna stay warm.
So everyone, what I said was, you had so much fun in the Texas ice apocalypse last year that you would like to recreate this as a vacation.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but maybe it's gonna be warmer than I think. I don't know, but
maybe it's a really well constructed home that's insulated and. Or you're just all going to cuddle together.
I feel
family
like they said
sleepover.
Right? I know. Like, cuddle all. Compile. I feel like they said they built it themselves. Like,
okay.
It's like this cabin. It's a legit cabin built in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
That is off the grid. There's no Wi-Fi. The kids kind of had a meltdown when we told them that there was no Wi-Fi. So earlier this week, Chris told the boys, like, hey, has your mom told you about the house we're staying at yet? And I was like,
has your dad told you about the house that he booked us yet?
Yeah, I was like, no, why would I have told them anything about it yet? No, yet you can tell them about this house. And so he tells them about the no Wi-Fi thing, and they're like about how to melt down. So he's trying to prep them of bring, like, pre-download movies or things ahead of time, things that don't need Wi-Fi. I think that she said she gets Verizon service out there.
Okay.
So I'm AT&T, so we'll see what we get. You can do your own hotspot if you can get a service. So So maybe we get a Wi-Fi signal.
Sure. But then once your devices are out of power, you have limited options in repowering them.
So I have my little power battery pack that I can bring, and I found a little solar powered battery pack.
So hopefully it's sunny.
I don't know.
Can you just like wear it on your back on the ski hill so all day long it can charge?
It can charge. I know. I'm thinking I'm just going to hang it outside.
You'll be that family that shows up to the ski lodge. You're like, don't mind us. We're just going to plug in our iPads and our iPhones and our computers because we don't have power.
I know. I'm like, can I charge it in the car? Yeah. I don't know.
That's true. You could turn the car on.
Maybe the car. If there's a way to plug it in the car. Okay. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with ideas. I really don't know what this is going to entail until
you have to be in it to understand it, because I don't know if you can fully prepare for a situation that you're not normally encountered with.
Yeah, I think I'm going through all the scenarios in my head and trying to prepare for it all, like,
What if?
If we can't shower or take showers? I'm not taking a cold shower. That's but I can bathe or, like, I can wipe down.
Better go to the hospital and get those, like, microwavable packs of wipes that they give people who can't get in the shower so you can at least
wipe down.
Wipe down a little bit.
I know.
Warm them by the fire.
I know. Or they have little shower caps for the people in the hospital, with the shampoo built in. Like, maybe the boys can wash their hair with that.
There you go.
But yeah, my plan is to shower and wash my hair right before we go.
Okay.
And then hope that maybe not until you get back. To wash my hair before we come back.
You have some sweet helmet hair for a while, but that's okay.
It's going to be amazing helmet hair. I don't know.
Pictures are required.
We're going to wear a lot of hats. Yeah. I'm wearing a lot of beanies.
That works. You're on a ski vacation, so at least it goes with the
I'm gonna be bundled up. Territory. I don't know. You're not gonna notice me. You just see my little eyes like peeking through.
People won't even really smell you. It'll get absorbed in the layers.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I don't think they can. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. So stay tuned to next episode for the
the follow up to spring break 2022.
Yeah, we'll have to update my off the grid.
Okay.
Stay. So we'll update on the next episode.
Yes, I look forward to that.
You're just jealous.
I am not.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not even jealous of myself.
I don't know what I would do. Yes, I commend you for agreeing to go. I'm not a skier to start with. That would be a terrible idea. Like, I should get fired as a patient if I ever said I was going to ski. Like,
yeah, no.
No one should. But anyways, if I were a skiing person, all knee issues aside, I don't like to be cold.
Yeah.
And I'm miserable when I'm cold. I'm miserable to be around. I don't know. Unless Tom just didn't want me to come, then he would book it. He'd be like, oh, you know, I really don't want you to go on this vacation. I'm like,
Well, and I don't mind being cold for a short period of time just for a trip. Yeah. And I like skiing. So when you're skiing, you actually get hot and like
you're But you get to go inside and warm up.
You go inside and drink hot cocoa, go sit by the fire, and usually there's someplace indoors. So I'm probably just gonna hang out at the like restaurants.
The lodge and
the lodges. The places at the valley, you know. Yeah, I mean, I usually get hot and you just, but yeah, I can stay there for a vacation, but I get to go home and leave and I don't have to live in it and I don't have to shovel snow and I don't have to.
So hopefully it doesn't snow a whole ton while you're there because, I never thought about that. You'll be required for the snow removal during the stay as well.
I don't think.
Did it come with shovels? Did you ask that? I'm just kidding.
I didn't ask for shovels. No, I'm hoping not. So it doesn't look like it's snowing the rest of the time.
Okay.
Per the weather app.
Okay.
It doesn't look like it's snowing the rest of the time, but it is chilly-ish. But maybe it'll be warmer. Oh, it's actually warmer now, like in the forecast, than it used to be.
Okay.
In the forecast. Oh, that's good. That's promising.
It probably is warmer there than it is here right now. It's frankly quite cold. What's their temperature right now?
37. It's here, it's what, 40?
No. Like 20 something, I think.
Oh. Or wait. Here? Oh, 39 right now. It's like 40. And then I was close.
Okay, you were close. I was close. Like, what does it say it feels
it's
like?
It's 37 right now. Oh, no, it doesn't say. Okay, yeah, no. I was looking at the wrong dates. Boo. So tomorrow the low is 9.
Oh, quite a bit different. Never mind.
High
I take
is
that off.
44. And then it's low of 18, high of 48. And then low of 22, high of 45.
So the 40s is probably good skiing weather, but the lows at night when you have to be sleeping in the location with no heat is the difficulty.
The lows are what I'm worried about. Yes. I can deal with the daytime and the skiing, like sunny.
That makes sense.
But the lows of the 9 to 27 is the range that we have going here, but it's all below freezing.
All right, I look forward
to it. That's all I know. But it's not snowing. That's good.
When you get a signal on the ski hill, you can text me and let me know how it's going.
It snows the day after we leave. Okay. So thank goodness.
No shoveling required.
Ugh, please no. Yeah, no.
Okay.
So all right. There's that.
Have fun. Yeah. I'm going to be here.
Yeah, you'll be here.
I'm going to take Meredith to the rodeo. We've lived in Texas almost 6 years, and we have one? Austin Rodeo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would really love to go to the Houston Rodeo someday. I think that's like the granddaddy of them all, right?
Yeah, that's huge. Uh-huh.
But we decided since the Austin Rodeo is during spring break that we would break ourselves in with that.
Is she able to ride one of the sheep, the lambs, you know, like the...
Oh, I actually don't know anything about it. Do they just let any children do that?
I
saw tickets
ranges.
About it, but I was like, what is this? I thought it was to watch the mutton busting.
Oh, my kids have participated in mutton busting. Mutton busting.
Mutton busting. Yeah. Okay, and so what is this?
It's very Texan. Yeah. I guess maybe it is a Texas thing. But mutton busting is where they ride the sheep across.
Okay.
Whoever stays on it the longest is the winner.
Oh, I didn't realize just like anyone could participate in this.
But there's techniques on how you hold
on. Well, sure.
And you wrap your legs around and you like wrap your arms around. And you don't, because usually they'll kind of like slide off to the side like on a horse and you just slide over and then fall off.
And so this is safer, I'm guessing, because the sheep are closer to the ground and less heavy, so they can't hurt you.
Well, they make them wear vests and helmets when they do it. But there's age ranges. Because
I am understanding these ticket situations. Like, oh, well, perhaps I need to go back and sign her up, because she would probably be down for that.
She would totally do it. Yeah. I can totally see her doing it. My kids have done it, and Cullen was very disappointed that he was not the winner. He was so mad. And then he didn't even want the t-shirt.
Like, he was like, I didn't win. I'm not.
Yeah. He didn't want any part of it. Okay. He didn't win. He was shocked that he did not win.
Was he close?
He was like second or third. Like,
I was
going
to say, he probably was super close. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really close. But he, in his mind, was going to be the winner. Yeah. And the fact that he didn't win, he was
a huge letdown.
So mad about it. Like, he wouldn't even talk to us. I mean, we were like, okay, let's go to dinner. You did great, buddy. Yeah. And he was just like, not even talking. It was so funny.
Okay.
The poor guy. But I bet Meredith would like it.
Yeah. All right. Well,
she's in the age range, like, depending on the
size. They had two different categories. I'll have to look at it. So, we're going to go to the rodeo and see what that all entails.
That would be so fun. Take pictures. Mutton busting.
Yeah, I will. And then, I don't know. We're going to... just hopefully the weather gets nicer and enjoy some time outside. So,
I don't know. That'd be nice.
Yeah, we'll find out.
It'd be nicer than going off the grid.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it did make me think, as we were talking about Cullen, though, how he has recovered from his spice adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Is he okay?
Yeah.
Will he ever eat spices again?
I don't know. Okay. Chris is still attempting to have him try other spicy things, and he has yet to
I don't blame him.
Take him up on that. Yeah. So I don't know when he'll try it again.
I do need to ask Tom. He was the one who had told me he had a friend who ate a lot of spicy food, and I really do believe, because everyone always thinks you need milk or cream, and that particular friend had said if you take a salt shaker and like dump the salt in your hand and pop it, that will like neutralize the acid from the spicy thing. Huh. So next time he tries, just have like, you know, you might hurt your kidneys. You'll go into a hypertensive crisis, but you'll calm that sensation in your mouth. So,
I feel like there's nothing that works when it's that bad.
Oh yeah.
And that miserable. Mm-hmm. No, nothing.
That poor kid. I was thinking about that. So.
Oh no.
All right, everyone. Well, we are super excited to have a guest interview back on the podcast this week, and we have a dermatologist, Dr. Donna Ward. So I actually worked with Dr. Ward in Indiana before moving to Texas. We were in the same multi-specialty group, and I personally learned so much from her. So we were in this like back cubby office, and there was multiple specialties, and that was a really great experience as someone who was just coming out of residency, because every once in a while you get a case of someone would say, well, like, I got this rash, or just challenging things. And so I absorbed a lot of information in a specialty I hadn't otherwise had a lot of experience with. So I admire her and look up to her and ask her questions to this day on things that I'm struggling with or need to know. So Dr. Ward is a board certified dermatologist, and she still works in Indiana, in Dyer in particular, for a group called Pinnacle. And she graduated from University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine, and then did her residency at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, and has spent some time at Vanderbilt for her internship. So she's traveled around a bit in her education, but she ultimately ended up back in Chicago and has been in practice for 18 years. We are so incredibly honored to have her on the podcast today.
Yeah, we're going to talk about hair loss today, which is big, it's a hot topic.
We learned a lot.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's a hot topic in the office, in my office especially, but I think every female
has thought about this.
Had these questions. Yeah. I mean, it's always an issue at some point.
So here we go. We're going to dive in. All right, everyone. So today on the episode, we are so lucky to have a friend of mine and a former colleague, a dermatologist, Dr. Donna Ward. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome.
So we have a lot of listeners who have questions primarily regarding a lot with hair loss. And Michaela as an OBGYN sees this in her practice a ton.
Oh, yeah. Probably every day. Oh, wow. There's a complaint about hair loss. Every day.
I can say in podiatry, we don't get conversations about hair loss.
You don't talk about all the hair loss.
No,
you talk about feet. Yeah.
So I'm going to let you kind of lead off with some of the questions that you wanted to touch on.
So yeah, I think in my practice, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for it, but I was going to kind of let you take it away. But I know we see quite a bit. A lot of patients think they're losing hair because of age, you know, so just aging in general or hormones or menopause.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'd like to start there, I guess, in general. Is there a natural aging process and hair loss in general to the natural population?
There is indeed. The medical term for it is what we call senescent hair loss, which basically refers to the decrease in hair thickness and the decrease in the rate of growth that you tend to see over time. I tell patients oftentimes that for every decade that you get older, there will be a noticeable decrease in the thickness of the hair. And how much it decreases over time, a lot of that is genetically determined. So unfortunately, not something that we have control over. I can't tell you how many times I cringe because you walk in and you look at the chief complaint and it says that it's an 81-year-old woman who comes in for hair loss. And you automatically know at that point that you're not going to have an answer that she's going to be very happy with and it's going to be very satisfying. So yes, that definitely is something that happens and does happen actually quite often.
That's a tough visit, right? Because you almost walk in and you're like, well, let me start off with the bad news. I don't have a great solution.
Right.
Or a reason. We can't point this to something and then make it.
But I feel like a lot of patients feel like it's all of a sudden, because it's all of a sudden a problem for them for some reason. And I don't know.
Do you feel like there's a tipping point? Like all of a sudden your hair is no longer a certain thickness and then it just changes the appearance so much?
It has to be. I don't know, because that's what brings them in, or that's, you know, all of a sudden it's a problem. And that's why they're like in her office. It's
sure.
Like they're coming in for that problem all of a sudden that now it's a problem when it's kind of been thinning out over time.
What do you think about that?
So interestingly enough, it's actually a lot more gradual than patients believe or realize it is. And when you mention that tipping point, what that usually is that family member that you haven't seen in a long time who points it out. So it's not that you've necessarily noticed it more. It's that someone has brought it to your attention. And either maybe your friend who you haven't seen in a long time, or a family member that you caught up with, or maybe a new hairdresser. But it truly is more gradual, but I think it's not until people start to notice it, or other people start to notice it, that it gives the patient enough angst that, you know, it warrants them coming in for a visit.
And then once you have something that you're thinking about, you really notice it. I know.
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. What are the top reasons for hair loss that you see?
So interestingly enough, since the pandemic began, I've seen a lot of patients with post-COVID hair loss.
Okay. And
they basically will get what we call a telogen effluvium, which is a type of hair loss that we'll see in other health conditions as well, but much more prevalent now since we've had the pandemic and so many people who've actually had COVID.
That's so fascinating.
What happens in those cases...
I said that's fascinating. Like, what's the pattern? Why, you know, many, many people had COVID. So what makes one person have really significant hair loss and not another?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic question. And so there's no fantastic answer for that one. But I will say that some of it may be related to the baseline nutrition of the patient. So there was a study that was done out of the Mayo Clinic that showed that ferritin levels that are less than 70 are associated with hair loss. So a ferritin of 20 or above is considered normal, but apparently to really facilitate hair growth, it should be at 70 or higher. So you wonder if some of those patients who suffer from the post-COVID telogen effluvium or hair loss, if maybe those patients had a lower ferritin level to start with. Hmm. Also, vitamin D levels that aren't optimal have been shown to be associated with the telogen effluvium as well. So it makes you wonder if maybe those patients may have a higher risk of hair loss following COVID infections. Mm. And then I don't know if there's been any studies yet to look at the severity of the COVID infection, if there's a correlation between that and the hair loss. But as time goes and we get more information, we may find that that could be a correlation as well.
We're going to learn so much about this, really. I know.
Well, and we actually noticed that correlation also in our office, because we get so many calls about hair loss just from hormone therapy and all of that, that patients call panicking that they think it's from hormones. And now our standard...
You know, to ask that question.
Yes, our standard first question is, did you have COVID and how long ago? Because it typically falls out like 2 to 3 months after that infection. And so we have to kind of go back and check and see like, okay, did you have COVID and when did you have COVID? And I think this is related to COVID and not your hormones or your medications.
So then when you have the patients who are experiencing the significant hair loss from COVID, are they later seeing it come back to normal? Or I mean, this is early on, right? In this, what is the trend?
Yeah, so a very good question. So with telogen effluviums really of any sort, so in your area, Michaela, you might see it associated with women who've recently given birth. They will have it start somewhere about 2 to 3 months after the event, so after they've been infected with COVID or after they've had the baby, but it lasts about maybe 2 to 3 months, and then it does all eventually come back. But with that being said, you have to remember if those patients don't have those building blocks, so their ferritin levels are less than 70 or their vitamin D levels are low or diminished, then they may have some problems with growing all of that hair back. So if they seem to have kind of a slower return of the hair, that might be something that you may want to check.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also is dependent on, like in my world with babies, we see that after delivery.
If they're breastfeeding or not?
Well, not just breastfeeding, but if they have another baby. So if by the time they start to regrow hair, they again get pregnant, and have another baby, or have a stressful event like the passing of a loved member, you know, or COVID, you know, like all these things, you know, a
the
year
stresses
later.
Add up to it.
So every year you have a big stressor. You keep losing, you keep
having
this.
That's why I'm
loss.
Like going bald. I don't know. Like medicine the last few years, it's really been challenging.
I was like, how do I get it back? That's
the
question.
Good news is you'll never go bald from that type of hair loss. I tell patients, worst case scenario is you could lose 50% of your normal thickness.
Okay.
But that's worst case scenario. And I think that in and of itself is reassuring because the hair loss with telogen effluviums, post-COVID infections or after deliveries, it can be really impressive. Like women can clog up drains in the shower. They can, you know, have hair all over the floor. One patient told me that you would have thought that she had a dog because that's how much she had to vacuum, because that's how much hair she was shedding. And so
I had a friend that would run her fingers through her hair. It was crazy.
So how many patients of yours bring you hair in a bag or show you pictures of the blocks of like the clogs of hair from the shower?
A lot of them
So I'm not the only one getting those. So I'm not the only one getting those.
Oh no It's better than some of the other things they can bring in bags, though, I will say.
I was just going to ask, I imagine in the derm world you get maybe a lot of interesting baggies of things.
You certainly do, including insects that you... that give you the heebie-jeebies, to say the least. So
I have a question about... So you're going to... You know, we talked about low vitamin D levels and the ferritin. Now, if we're just to extrapolate, does it have any evidence to say if you don't have telogen effluvium or you haven't had COVID, but you would like to grow more hair, if you take those supplements, does that work?
So good question. So routinely what I'll do is if I have a patient that comes in and they're complaining of hair loss, I will check that blood work, especially if it's a young woman who's still having periods, because they're more likely to have that lower ferritin level, say, than an older patient. Though I will sometimes find it in them as well. So I will routinely check a vitamin D and then also a ferritin level. And if the ferritin's less than 70, I will usually supplement with an iron polysaccharide. If the vitamin D is low, I tell the patients automatically, I say, you know, that vitamin D has a lot to do with your breast and bone health. So I'm not going to give you the supplement. You're going to have to see your primary care physician, sure, because I do want them to make sure that they're, you know, keeping track of those things as well. But so, yeah, those levels are low. Okay. Even if they don't have any other reason for having the hair loss, I would supplement it.
I think that's good. And vitamin D is underappreciated. We could probably do an entire episode on that, because I feel like I have this discussion all the time. And, the, you know, like diffuse bone pain and stress fractures and now hair loss I'm learning. And we need to be more, I think it needs to be more routinely screened. That's my own personal opinion on it.
But,
I agree. Especially in African American patients, because they tend to have lower levels of vitamin D just due to the fact that their pigment, or our pigment, I should say, is equivalent to about an SPF 15.
Okay.
So we are literally blocking the vitamin D that we're getting from the sun.
I'm glad that you shared that. We have a large Indian population here, and so I noticed that a lot. I see a lot more stress fractures, and as a result, lower vitamin D. And I didn't really know what to correlate that to or how that worked, but that helps me. Yeah. Thank you.
What are some other reasons for hair loss that you see the most?
So I would say, you know, oftentimes, especially in, I see a large amount of African-American patients, being an African-American female, they tend to seek me out for advice, especially with hair care practices. So we do see quite a bit of hair loss from some of the practices that are routinely done to straighten the hair. And then there's been sort of a trend more with the younger women in terms of using different types of like hair extensions and hair pieces that they attach to the hair. So, depending on how that's done, that can also result in hair loss. And that hair loss, I will say, is not as forgiving as the telogen effluvium.
Oh.
That hair loss oftentimes can be permanent.
Wow.
Really difficult to bring it back, because those hair follicles can literally be destroyed. And once you destroy the hair follicle, then that actually is kind of a done deal.
Okay.
The fate has been sealed, unfortunately.
Is that from the constant pressure? Like, does it equilibrate to really tight ponytails all the time? I mean, because there's different types of hair extensions or thing, right? Like, there's the tape-ins and there's the tie-ins. Where does that fall?
So it really depends on how the hair has been attached.
Okay.
If it's been, sometimes it can be glued in. So sometimes you can even have like a contact dermatitis or a chemical irritant dermatitis that can result in inflammation, that can result in hair loss. What you were describing before about the tight ponytails, that's more of what we call traction alopecia. If caught early enough, that's actually relatively easily reversed, usually with just stopping the practice. And then sometimes we'll do an intralesional Kenalog injections into the area to decrease any inflammation. But if let go too long, then you will often have a permanent hair loss. And that's actually really common in women who pull their hair back tightly, or who attach ponytails tightly. Or interestingly enough, women who get, there was a, not as much now, but there was a trend probably about 5 or 10 years ago where women were getting micro braids, and they would attach this really long braid, this really tiny piece of hair. And so just the weight of the braid on that small piece of hair would literally pull it right out of the scalp.
Ew, wow. Is that like those little braids you would get on the cruise? Like what that? Like
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But then attaching a long braid to that, it would just be so heavy for that little piece of hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, now I'm going to tell that to Meredith, because every day when she goes to school, she's like, a tight high pony, please. And I'm like, your hair's going to fall out.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just want her to wear some other hairdo. And I say that, but I'm like, now I have evidence.
So we should be concerned about Ariana Grande's like tight high pony.
Yeah. Well, I spent last year like having all those tape-in extensions. I was like, good gracious, I was going to make myself bald.
Oh, yeah. Like, do they, like, are they easy to get out though? Like,
I mean, they had to tug them out really hard because there was a lot of adhesive. But I don't have them moved up all the time. But,
yeah.
I mean, then the price of hair, like the price of gas went through the roof. So I was like, you can take these out. You can take these out of my head now. The lady was like, the next set of hair will be $1,000. I was like, I don't need fake hair for that much money.
Oh, my gosh. But it's. I think it's hard to go.
It like is because back. I felt I actually had struggled a lot with how naked I felt and like didn't like my hair at all for months afterwards because I loved it being so thick. But it's just it's like it's difficult to clean and wash your hair with all that in. And I felt like it was like the entry, what are they, the gateway drug, right? Like pretty soon I was going to be there like having my hair hand tied in rows. But now I feel validated in that if I I really have very thin hair and a pretty big bald spot from an injury when I was a kid. So I was like, I can't lose anymore.
Well, my hairdresser was showing me their new one with like the sewing, like they sew they these weave strips it on. Yeah, they like sew it on, and they. She said it's supposed to be better and not like a lot of traction. Or
see,
something.
I can't imagine all the things. I mean, all these beauty practices. You must see tons of this stuff in your office.
Yeah,
we will do tend to see quite a bit, and it's interesting that you mentioned the sew-ins. And that's the one that I tell them if they have to get, that would be the one that they should get. Or nowadays, also they'll use like a crochet. Where they braid the native or natural hair, and of course you have to do that loosely, but then they attach either by crochet or by sewing in the sort of unnatural artificial hair to the scalp without having to use any adhesive or anything like that. So that's that'd be the safest way. I always tell patients, as close as you can get to your natural hair is the safest way to style your hair. And I emphasize that you're not going to have amazing hair days every day when you're using your natural hair, obviously, but you'll have some hair to style when you want to have, a great hair day. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the big picture.
That's true. Okay.
Are there any medications or anything that can cause hair loss?
So definitely the biggest, most common one that we tend to see is methotrexate. So in a lot of our patients who are treated for either psoriasis or for rheumatoid arthritis, as a matter of fact, my mom suffered really significant hair loss. She was diagnosed with RA during the pandemic and was treated with methotrexate. And it was astounding how much hair she actually lost with the methotrexate. So that's a really common one, along with a lot of the synthetic vitamin A's. So probably the most common one would be the acetretin or Soriatane that we use to treat psoriasis. But then also Accutane that we use to treat acne. We'll see it there too. And as you mentioned, Michaela, the hormones, either starting or stopping a hormone can definitely be associated more so with that telogen effluvium type of hair loss, though.
Yeah, and we see, like, with testosterone therapy, I know a common side effect, you kind of have a lot of hair growth everywhere, though. It's not, like, on your head, but you kind of have it everywhere. Like, you're going to have to shave your legs more or, you know, pluck that hair on your face that you're always having to pluck or wax or shave. You know, you kind of have to do it more often. But I know that in higher amounts, you can sometimes have hair loss in women, but I don't see that as often. But I know you can have it with that, too.
Definitely.
So why does hair grow in all the places that we routinely pluck it out of? Like my eyebrows, I've plucked since I was like 12. Why do they keep coming? Like, do they not just get the message?
Right.
And then last week I had to pluck like 5 white ones. I was like, I'm dying. Like, this is the end.
Because you want them to come back because we don't want to live like we were in the 90s.
No,
like,
I know.
We plucked them to these tiny little thin strips.
This is true.
These little pencil lines.
So in case the trends change.
Thank goodness it came back because it gives us the option to change our style.
I don't know. I think that I'm like, I've been plucking these for years and they just continue to grow.
Like the Terminator.
Yeah, exactly.
What is your opinion on PRP treatments for hair growth?
So it definitely does work. There's been some studies that have shown that it's beneficial for another type of hair loss that we call alopecia areata, and then also for the androgenetic alopecia, which is the fancy term for the female pattern hair loss. It does not have insurance coverage, though. So depending on where you go, those treatments can be quite costly. Sure. Sometimes in the several hundred to thousands, low thousands of dollars range. So it's...
Is it a maintenance thing? Do you need to continuously get it? Or do you get it for, because I would wonder, like, hair is a constant turnover process. So some things, you know, inflammation, joints, maybe you're a one or two time PRP. So that's a swallow. You can swallow that cost a little bit more. But if I know, I have to have PRP injected every 3 months, is that how it is for hair loss?
I don't know how often it's done.
Yeah.
I just know of it.
It's a relatively new treatment that I actually haven't personally done as of yet. But there are some dermatologists who specialize more in hair loss who I'm sure are doing more of it. Okay. So I don't know that they've set up yet any sort of specific schedule.
I suppose it depends,
but I'm
sure
there's probably some anecdotal based on experience that, you know, some of the dermatologists specialize in that area.
So, well, stay tuned, but we know it's you actually see positive results from it. So that's a nice thing to be able to tell people.
There's actually studies and research too to support it.
Awesome.
So,
I know that some patients that show up to my office, their hairdresser sent them. They're like, you need to go get your thyroid checked. Go see your doctor because your hair is thinning. You need to go get your thyroid checked. Is that a common concern? Like, do patients come to you asking about thyroid, or do they just come to you just straight for hair loss?
So they mostly come for hair loss. And I will tell you, in almost 18 years of practicing and checking the thyroid when a patient presents with hair loss, I have not diagnosed a single hyper or hypothyroid patient yet. So those patients who have the issues with the hair loss related to the thyroid usually are already diagnosed, and then they'll come in and they'll have the hair loss. And interestingly enough as well, some of those patients have sort of relatively normal thyroid function once they're medicated, but they're still having the hair loss. Yeah. So, you know, in those cases, there's obviously something else going on, and maybe it's the fact that the thyroid hormone is not naturally being produced that, you know, it doesn't stop the hair loss, although it may improve it. Those patients will still oftentimes suffer from hair loss.
Yeah, I feel like it's something I always check it, but I feel like it doesn't ever give you a whole lot. Like, it's always a wishful thinking for the patient. Like, oh, it's going to be an easy fix. Like, maybe it's just my thyroid and I can just take a medicine and then it'll
take
be
that
fixed.
Pill and it's going to make me skinny too and my hair's going to grow back. And if that's the case, where's the Synthroid? Send me up.
Where is this magical pill that we're missing? Because I want to grow my hair and lose some weight.
Oh, my God.
Let's have it as an after-dinner treat.
Absolutely.
Do you have any other common ones that causes that you have for hair loss that you see?
So probably one of the more common causes that we'll see is alopecia areata. Mm-hmm. That's the more autoimmune mediated type of hair loss where literally overnight you lose a patch of hair. And in those patients, traditionally, they come in where the scalp is completely bald in that one patch. Mm. So my question to the patient sometimes is, you know, when this first started, did that patch of, you know, hair on your scalp, did it look like the back of your hand when after it fell out? And they go, yeah, it was completely clean. And that's characteristic of alopecia areata.
Okay.
Which, believe it or not, is self-limited in that. In the vast majority of cases, even if you did nothing at all, that hair would eventually come back. It's like the body's immune system goes, oh, that's right, that's my hair, I shouldn't be attacking that. And then it stops, and then the hair comes back. But to try to have that happen more rapidly, we usually will do intralesional Kenalog injections into those areas. And usually we'll do about 4 to 6 injections and separate them by about 6 weeks. And depending on the patient, they can start to respond as early as after the first injection, but some may take that whole 4 to 6 sort of series of injections before they'll grow back. But thankfully, it's self-limited and it usually lasts no longer than 2 years. But of course, there's always that nightmare case where they have alopecia totalis or universalis where they lose all the hair all over their body. And those cases actually have a much more poor prognosis for regrowth.
Is that hereditary or just random?
That's random. It's autoimmune. And I get that question a lot where the patient's like, what happened? You know, was it this tomato that I ate? And, you know, honestly, we don't know what the trigger is. Okay. Some people, you know, they find that they've had a few episodes of it in their life and it was after a stressful event. And so I tell patients possibly that could be related to it, but we know that stress isn't the only causative factor because there's true histologic evidence of inflammation of the area surrounding the bulb of the hair follicle. So we know that that's obviously not just stress related.
And that can occur to kids quite young, right? All ranges of people.
It can. It can actually occur to just about anybody at any age. And it's really tough in the kids because it can be really hard for them to have undergo injections for the treatment.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, growing up is hard enough, and then that's a hard factor to handle.
Yes, it is. So usually with the kids, we'll try to use topical medications, topical steroids, and sometimes minoxidil. The 5% foam once a day will be helpful as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Are there any over-the-counter type options for patients who just want to help thicken their hair or have better, thicker hair?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean? Like, is our money well spent on these
right,
things?
Right, as in, like, instead of going to the doctor or getting, like, a prescription, is there anything over-the-counter besides the vitamin D and the ferritin kind of ever increasing iron stores?
Any, like, product, you mean?
Yeah, like, products okay. or something that if, like, a listener was like, I want to go try this thing over-the-counter, like, what's over-the-counter that easily accessible to patients that they can try?
Sure, so here's my disclaimer time. I have no financial interest in either of these companies that I'm going to mention. But there's two products, actually, that I'll routinely recommend in cases where they've come in with hair loss. I've checked their ferritin, and that's good. I've checked their vitamin D, and that's good. And we've gone through kind of the whole list of questions that we usually go through, and that's all negative. And those two products are Nutrafol. They actually have tablets that you can take as well as a topical hair growth serum. And then the other one that I usually recommend is called Viviscal. They're both great products. They're at two different price points. So I tell patients you can kind of find which one fits into your budget. I have personally seen how well they both work, though, on my mom. As I was mentioning, she had a pretty significant hair loss after she was started on methotrexate for her rheumatoid arthritis. And she was very sort of stressed and anxious about it. And so she wanted something. She goes, well, you know, what can I do? And I gave her the Viviscal and Nutrafol. And, you know, I wasn't sure if it would help her or not, but it really has made some significant, very visible changes. So those are probably my two favorite over-the-counter supplements. Biotin can also be helpful. I don't think biotin is as helpful, though, at bringing back hair loss. But what I think it's helpful for is if you have hair that's breaking and it's not very strong. So I usually would recommend biotin in those cases. And there have been some associations with people who take sort of excessive biotin who can have some abnormal labs as a result. So I tell patients to max out at 2,500 micrograms a day.
Okay.
And then last but not least, our good old favorite from back in the day that Carl Malone was a big advocate for is minoxidil or Rogaine. And it comes as a 2% and a 5%. I tell patients the 5% is advertised for men, but it's safe and effective for women and actually works better than the 2%. So I do usually have them get the minoxidil 5%.
Okay.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, that is good to know.
Yeah, because there's so many products out there.
I know.
And are all of those available on Amazon? Because that's kind of the only place I shop.
Are they all just... Oh, yeah, definitely. The Viviscal, I think I've seen in Walgreens, but usually it's actually less expensive. Because sometimes you can, if you're a big Amazon shopper like I am, you can do that subscribe and save. Yeah.
I feel like my BFF is the Amazon guy. Yeah. I'm like, hey, hey, Joe, how's it going today? You know, like...
Right.
I'm like, please tell me everything's on Amazon because that would be great.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, definitely. You can definitely find all of those products on Amazon, and you can do the subscribe and save, and then you'll get it every month and save a few dollars for the same time. Yeah.
So this is a little bit off topic of hair loss, but I'm going to ask a question of, as a curly haired person, how terrible are the treatments in the salon to make your hair straight?
So in general, they can be pretty terrible. Depends on the treatment, but any excessive heat or any sort of excessive, well, I shouldn't say excessive, but any type of chemical, what happens is not only does it alter the hair and make it in general more dry and more brittle and more likely to break.
Basically breaking the protein, right? Yeah.
But then also there's the issue with the scalp, too. So that excessive heat on the scalp and then also the chemicals on the scalp can actually do damage. And We talked earlier in our conversation about the African-American yes. women who oftentimes came in with the hair loss and who'd had chemically straightened hair with relaxers. It's along those same lines. Over time, you get kind of this chronic inflammation from okay. those chemicals. And as a result of that, that can actually do damage to the scalp, which can result in loss of the hair follicle. And again, once you lose the hair follicle, it's a done deal. No hair can grow back at that point.
So I'm so curious because I understand, you know, the biochemistry of straightening hair with heat. Like you heat it, you denature the protein, it gets wet, it recoils. But how do the chemical ones work?
It's the same thing. It breaks those disulfide bonds.
Okay.
It's the heat. So basically you're denaturing the protein with either heat or you're denaturing the protein with the chemical.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. I've never tried it. I'm scared to death of like my hair all falling out. But you like see people are like, oh, I did it.
And I still regret it.
Do you?
Okay. I did a straightener because my hair's naturally curly. And I did it, I don't know how many years ago, 6 years ago maybe. But I liked it and didn't like it. It was super straight, as in like board straight. Okay. I could be in the pool and get splashed and it just sat there. It didn't like get frizzy or do anything. Oh. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
But then it was really straight, and then you couldn't do anything.
But what
to
happened
it.
When it growed out? Then did you have like kinky hair on the top and straight hair on the bottom?
It wasn't as obvious as that, but it was just very odd, like because I couldn't then do anything to it. Like I couldn't curl it just to make
you just had stick straight hair.
Yeah, it was stick straight hair. Like, I couldn't even like curl the ends well. Okay. It wouldn't hold a curl just with a curling iron to go out at night.
How long did that last?
Mine lasted, well, most of them will last a good, like, 6 months or a year. Mine lasted a good, like, year or so. Like, it really took it and ran with it. It was just, like,
And you said you did yours for 2 years and you regret it?
Actually, it was longer. I think it was more like 10 years. I started in college.
Okay.
And then I went through college and med school. And then it was actually when I started my dermatology residency. And I started seeing a lot of the African-American women coming in with hair loss. With the relaxers, I was like,
done. Right. Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Well, yeah. I was like, you have beautifully curly hair. So,
thank you. I say you have to kind of deal with the cards that you're dealt. And, you know, again, you won't have a great hair day every day, but you'll have some hair to style when you want to.
I like that statement. I'm going to take that. You should sell that. You should make it like boards that people put in their bathroom. I think that should be a thing. You could sell that.
We'll have like some t-shirts.
Yeah, we'll just copyright that for you right now. That is Dr. Donna Ward's quote. No one can take it. That's hers.
I'm gonna call my attorney now so we can start the trademark.
Yeah, exactly. That's done. All right. Well, we know you have a meeting and that was so awesome. Thank you for sharing so much information with us on hair loss.
Yeah, my pleasure.
If listeners wanted to find you, do you website practice, if you wanted to share that information, if you have any social media platforms that you encourage people to follow, or if just your office platform. Website.
Yeah, I'm kind of a social media dinosaur. So mostly it's just through my office website. So just recently we merged with Pinnacle Dermatology. So I practice out of their Dyer Dermatology office.
Okay. I saw that. It's a massive group.
Yeah, it's a very massive group. They have practices all over, but primarily in Illinois and Indiana. But I think they have some as far reaching as it's like the West, closer to like the West Coast, Pacific Northwest area.
I looked. There's many. So congratulations. Yeah.
Well, thank you. If they ever want to reach me, they can find me there.
We'll put the information in the post. We'll put the information in the post. And then what's your favorite Starbucks drink?
Oh, my order is kind of long and obnoxious. So are you ready?
Yes. Sure, we're ready.
This is going to be good.
So it's a green tea latte made with oat milk and 2 pumps of sugar-free vanilla and 2 stevia and an extra scoop of matcha powder.
I love it.
I love it.
Do you have to preface that at the window too?
Rolling your eyes and giving this, she's like, oh my God.
Or
when I said what else I meant is you want like a muffin, not...
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yeah. Or like, but they have it in the app so nicely now. You can just save it. So you just be like, I just want my, you know, like my usual, and like pre-order it, so it's ready for pickup and you like, come to the window.
Yes. Order again. Check.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And then, well, we had so many COVID questions. We don't need those anymore. But where are you most looking forward to traveling? Whether you're traveling this summer or spring break.
My husband and I are big wine lovers, and so we are actually going to be traveling at the end of this month to Sonoma. So just excited to like be someplace that's far away, and I live in Chicago, so someplace that's not snowing.
Sunshine.
Just snowed yesterday.
Yeah.
So excited to go someplace warm or and then no snow and with wine and beautiful nature. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, so I think of you all the time. We're going to Disney in October. And so I was I was like, are you going to go to Disney this year?
You know, so we last time we went was 2019. So yeah. October 2019. And we were yearly, like, huge Disney people. And then the pandemic hit. And then my kids turned into teenagers.
I was wondering. I was like, yeah, they're bigger now. They're probably like, we're over it, Mom.
Kind of. And my husband and I, it's so sad because we use them as reasons to go to Disney because we love it so much.
Yeah.
So maybe he and I will go, but I think they're a little bit over it and we're probably at that countdown now. My oldest son is a freshman in high school, so we more summer. I know, it's crazy how fast that went. So we're probably going to try to do maybe some like Caribbean stuff or hang out on the beach and, you know, hopefully they'll talk to us a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Well, what would be fun is doing Disney in another country, like Paris or, doing Disney in a different country, which is a totally different fun experience where you can still travel and go do other stuff and then hit up a really cool Disney
I don't have the personal experience, but my brother-in-law and sister-in-law are now doing Adventures by Disney. So they're going to like Costa Rica. Yeah. It's basically like Disney. And then there's like still, it's sort of like you're on the cruise. Like there's a kids club, so the kids get to go hang out with the kids and do kids stuff. But everyone has like curated tour guides and fun things. Yeah. So I was like, well, that sounds amazing when you're still
want
like the Disney vibe. So I don't know. But we'll have so much fun in wine country.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank you.
Thank you for joining with us today. And have a wonderful weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks, you ladies, for the same, and thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Thank you. So we'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
That's it for today. Thanks again for tuning in. We have been loving all the feedback and the questions that we are receiving, so just keep them coming.
Don't forget, if you want to leave a voice message, just go to the link at the bottom of the description in the episode. You may even hear your question or comment here on the show.
And remember to subscribe so you'll be the first to know every time we release a new episode. We are so grateful for all of the downloads, rates, and reviews. These help to drive our podcast up in the rankings and makes it easier for others to find us.
Do you have an interesting idea or a question that you want answered here on the podcast? Send us an email at tits2toespodcast@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at @fromtits2toes. And remember,
keep your tits up
and your toes down.